Thanks everyone for joining this morning. And I believe it might be very cold there. I'm fine here. It's 11 o'clock. It's still nice outside. So today I'll talk about this technique of convex split and its applications to quantum resource theory and quantum communication. So let me just start with giving you guys a overview of what I'll talk about. So I plan to make this talk into three parts, and it might happen that I may not reach the third part because of something, like maybe we're going slow. So I'll make sure that at least some of the parts are covered. So the first part, we'll start with the simplest version of what we call convex split lemma. And we'll see how it applies to the noise required in destroying a resource. And we will also, in the end of this part, talk about some brief overview of the applications of this technique to other resources. Very briefly for 5 minutes. In the second part, I will extend the lemma which I will have shown you in the first part, simplest version. I'll extend it with an external reference system. And this, I'll show you how to apply to protocols for quantum communication. And then we'll also discuss how does this lemma connect to decoupling theorems, which are well known in quantum information. And in the last part, I will connect these techniques to the scheme of port-based teleportation. And at this stage, I think it'll be good to introduce another phase of these techniques, which is the position-based decoding. Once I've done that, and I'll give you a new kind of protocol for entanglement-assisted quantum communication over a noisy quantum channel. So, okay, I believe this thing is... So this is the second part of the first part, section two, and it's about the resource destruction. It has four components. So before I describe the lemma, I would like to set up some notations that I will use. I would like to use some pictorial notations to describe the results. So a red dot will represent a quantum state sigma on a resistor B. A blue dot will represent a quantum state psi on the resistor B. And I will use these two quantities. So first quantity is known as the max relative entropy. It's not important for you guys to know exactly what is the definition here. Here, this inequality means like loner inequality. It's like a positive term, some different condition. So that's the max relative entropy. It'll show up at several places. And here is the relative entropy, which is standard defined in this way. So once the notation is there, okay, actually, there are some more notations. So whenever I have two dots like this, one blue above and one red below, I will represent this quantum state. That means it's like quantum state psi on the first resistor and sigma on the second resistor. And if I have a notation of this form, which is, as you can see, it's some kind of psi on the top and sigma on below, plus sigma on top and psi below, it's a convex combination of these two quantum states. So I hope the notation is clear. And with these notation, the convex combination that I'm interested in is of this form. And this is how it looks like. So on the first resistor here, so it's a convex combination of n quantum states. It's all uniformly, it's all taken uniformly. And in the first case, we have a quantum state psi and sigma tensor sigma tensor sigma and so on, plus 1 over n sigma tensor psi tensor sigma and so on. So it's a convex combination of quantum states where the state psi is at different locations in different parts. Now, the lemma says the following, that if n is large enough, that means essentially if log n is larger than some quantity that only depends on sigma and psi plus some small error epsilon, then this quantum state is epsilon close in fact, we can prove it for relative entropy, but let's take it for some trace distance or something. Epsilon close to a quantum state where there's no psi. It's all sigma tensor sigma tensor sigma tensor sigma. And I'll use this result to the following setting. So to describe the setup, I'll consider the work of Grossman, Popescu, and Winter, which is as follows. There are two parties, Alice and Bob, They share a joint quantum state rho AB. Alice introduces a register J, which holds this uniform quantum state, like in a uniform distribution. And controlled on J, Alice applies a unitary on her pair, which is. And after this operation, a register J is thrown out, as a result of which the quantum state rho changes to some rho prime, which is here. That's rho AB tensor tau, which is the uniform distribution. And then after that, Alice applies this controlled unitary and throws away the register J. And as a result, we get rho prime. The condition is that, the task is that, we have to find these unitaries and large enough register J such that rho prime is close to a product state. You can see, I guess rho B is not important. It could be any product state. Typically, you'll find there to be rho B. So the result of these authors, Grossman, Popescu, and Winter, says the following. It works in the asymptotic and IID setting, in which we consider n independent copies of the quantum state rho AB. And what they showed is that the number of bits in the shared randomness required to achieve this task, that means totally decorrelate the correlation between A and B, is roughly n times the mutual information between A and B, up to some small factors which go to zero as n goes to infinity, which can go to zero as n goes to infinity. And here, I of A and B is the mutual information, and there are several ways to write it. First is as a relative entropy between the quantum state rho AB and the marginal of rho AB, and it can also be written as infimum over marginal, either of the marginal. So in some sense, the mutual information represents the relative entropy distance of rho AB with the closest uncorrelated or product state. And what these authors showed, that the amount of noise required is characterized by this distance, that is the mutual information. So from this, I'll move on to the following setup, which is the problem of destroying entanglement. So the earlier case was a problem of destroying correlation. In this setup, it's very similar, but it was a question which was left open in their work, and we'll consider this problem, and we'll sort of expand this setup a bit. So we have this quantum state rho AB, which is shared between Alice and Bob. Again, there is this shared randomness now, because in the earlier case, it was a private randomness, which makes sense before destroying correlation, but because we want to destroy entanglement, and the shared randomness is an unentangled state, so it's a potentially more powerful resource to use. It's a unentangled state, which can be used by the parties. So Alice and Bob share this randomness, which is perfectly correlated. And they also are allowed to share a separable state, an additional separable state, which is unentangled. And they can, locally, they apply a unitary on their registers, controlled on the value they see from the shared randomness. And then they throw away this shared randomness. So the quantum state here represents that. So rho AB was the original state. Sigma A prime B prime was a separable state that was introduced by Alice and Bob. Tau was the shared randomness. And controlled on the shared randomness, Alice and Bob applied their local unitaries. And then they threw away J and J prime. As a result, we have the quantum state omega AA prime BB prime. So what do we require from this quantum state? We require that omega AB returns the quantum state, the additional blue quantum state, that is a separable quantum state, almost as it was before. And the original quantum state rho AB is now a separable state, which is essentially like saying that the additional blue quantum state acted as a catalyst in this process, and it was returned the way it was before. And the task of transforming the original quantum state into an unentangled state was also achieved. So before I discuss the results, let me quickly define a few quantities. This quantity is the, sorry, is there a question there? Maybe not. Anyway. So let me define the quantity E of rho AB, which is quantifying the amount of entanglement in some sense. So it is the smallest relative entropy distance from a separable state of rho AB. And in the one shot setting, we will use the max relative entropy version of this. The parameter epsilon in the dmax here is a smoothing parameter. Please don't worry about that. And the quantity dmax should be viewed as a one shot version of relative entropy. And again, just to remind you, this is dmax, and dmax epsilon is just a smooth version of that. And in the resource theory framework, dmax is also related to what is known as the robustness of rho. So anyway, this is not important. The robustness is just what we described here. So what we show is that the number of bits that are to be discarded by Alice and Bob, number of bits in the shared randomness that has to be discarded is characterized by this quantity, the one shot version of the relative entropy distance. This one over here. So let me show what we show. We give an achievable protocol which for any delta makes an error of epsilon plus delta, and one needs to discard the quantity that I just talked about, the quantity that I claim is characterizing this number of bits, plus a little bit of overhead of log 1 or delta bits. And any protocol that wishes to achieve an error of at most epsilon must discard this many number of bits. And in the asymptotic and ideal setting, this becomes 1 over n times the regularized relative entropy of entanglement. So it answers the question of Grossman, Popisco, and Winter if we allow Alice and Bob to add these shared, separable states as a catalyst. I mean, these separable states will be returned back in very close to the original form. And let me mention that these results were also independently obtained by Berta and Mezens simultaneously using the same techniques. So once I have this, we'll generalize these results to other resource theories, or to a nice collection of resource theories. So what is a resource theory? It's a collection of quantum states which are assumed to be free. And for example, in the case of entanglement, separable states are free states. They don't have any resource, and every entangled state is a resource. And the question is to characterize the amount of resource in some operationally meaningful way. So similarly, you can define several resource theories. So the assumptions of the resource theory is that you first start with a set F, which is a set of free states that you assume beforehand. And every other state is then an expensive or a resourceful state. So what we assume from the set F, that it should be a convex set, which, for example, it's a family of sets for every Hilbert space, and it has to be a convex set for every Hilbert space. And it's closed under tensor products and closed under partial trace. These assumptions can be made more rigorous, but roughly they look of this form. And let me represent by U the sort of all unitaries that take free states to free states. For example, the operations that do not increase, they do not create entanglement, operations that take separable state to separable state will belong to the set U for the resource theory of entanglement. And we will define the relative entropy of resource as the smallest distance of any quantum state from the set of free states in terms of relative entropy. Similarly, we'll define the one-shot relative entropy of resource as the smallest distance of any quantum state in this one-shot, the max relative entropy. Just to give a little bit of intuition here, so here is our set F, which is a set of free states. This big circle represents all states. If a resourceful state is rho m, then the relative entropy of resource roughly captures the closest distance to the separable state. And let me rephrase our task in this framework. It goes like this. So M is the resistor which contains my resourceful state. Think of it as, in the picture of Alice Bob, as the rho AB. Similarly here, we have a resistor where we are given a resourceful state M. We are allowed to add any free state in resistors E and J. For now, I'll only assume J to be a uniform randomness, for which I'll have to assume that uniform randomness belongs to the free state, but that will be assumed. That'll hold to be, we'll have that requirement everywhere. So anyway, the task is the following, that you have this M, you add this free state E and J. Control on J, you apply this unitary on M and E, and you throw away J. And the task is that after throwing away J, the M should turn into a free state and E should stay the way it was before. So given the task, this task can be further extended in framework where the unit trees don't have to be controlled unit trees, but I won't go into them at this stage at least. So what is our results? So in the one-shot setting, what we show is that the number of bits discarded in this picture, where we have this additional J, and I'm counting the number of bits in J that are being discarded. The number of bits is again characterized by the smooth one-shot max relative entropy of resource, which means in a very analogous way, as in the entanglement case, we give an achievable protocol, which makes an error of epsilon plus delta for every delta, and it requires discarding the quantity that I showed you plus a little bit of log 2 log 1 over delta number of bits. And any protocol that wants to make an error less than epsilon or equal to epsilon must discard at least that many bits. And in the asymptotic NID setting, this becomes the regularized relative entropy of resource. Sorry, and in some sense gives an operational repetition to both one shot and the asymptotic IID quantities. What's nice about this is that it's also nearly optimal in the one shot setting. And let me mention a bit more on the role of regularized relative entropy of resource, which is essentially this quantity. Let me just talk about the relative entropy of resource for now. It can be regularized. So this work of Brandau and Gore, it showed that in the asymptotic NID setting, if you want to transform m copies of rho into n copies of sigma, then the rate of transformation, that means m over n, is given by the ratio of these two resources, assuming that you're allowed to add free states. And it somehow suggests, at least like from my point of view, it suggests that E of rho, the relative entropy of resource, is a natural measure for quantifying the amount of resource. Also, if you add our work, it seems to be saying that you need just that much to destroy all the resource present in a state within our framework. And let me mention an interesting question over here, that it's a very interesting question to kind of make their result one shot, although their result only applies in the asymptotic NID setting. So let me quickly mention the protocol, what we do. So here's my quantum state rho, which is a resourceful state, which is sitting on the top, it's the red one. And the green ones are my free states. So I add sufficiently many of them. The number n here will depend on the convex split lemma that I mentioned, but I mean, there's some number n. And sigma is the free state that minimizes the regularized relative entropy of resource. So this protocol depends on rho. It's not a universal protocol. And what we do is that we add our randomness, which is basically on log n bits, where n is the number, which n is the number of free states. And control on n, we swap rho n. Control on the value j in n, we swap rho n, rho j. So the state starts looking like this, which means that if the shared randomness said 1, then I swap m with m1. And if it was saying 2, I swap m with m2 and so on. And then I throw away my randomness, which means that the quantum state on the system looks like this. So notice that the first register has become completely free now, and the second register is close to the original sigma tensor m by convex split lemma, as n is large enough. And we can end this protocol also nearly optimal, as I mentioned earlier. So let me just mention what resource theories can we capture in our framework. So notice that in this protocol, I'm only doing a controlled swap operation. That means control on the value of the state randomness, I'm just swapping the first register with some register. So the control swap operation belongs to the free operations or allowed operations for a large class of resource theories. So some examples are coherence, which have been very well studied. And the third reference over here is a very nice review on this. Then the resource theory of asymmetry, it applies to the framework of Okakua, where this relative entropy of resource, frameness in this case is non-zero. It doesn't apply to the formulation given in this work because in this case, the relative entropy of frameness is zero. The regularized one. And it also applies to the resource theory of non-uniformity, also to quantum thermodynamics. So given this thing, this is the end of the discussion on resource theory. Are there any questions from the audience?
No. We have it.
Oh, sorry, sorry. So I believe there are no questions. Then I'll proceed. Okay. Okay. So I'll take 5 minutes. I'll take this. I'll just pause here for a while from our flow and kind of talk about the applications of the technique that I mentioned in various settings for around 5 minutes, and then we'll move on to our usual simple protocols. So I'll discuss three results here. First is applicable to quantum source compression problems, where we'll also use a technique of position-based decoding, which I will discuss much later towards the end of the talk. And then I will talk about the quantum channel coding settings with the, again with this, with the aid of the same technique. And then I'll give some other applications. So the first technique that I'll mention is the task of quantum state redistribution, which I try to portray graphically here, where there's a party reference which is inaccessible, and Alice and Bob are holding, Alice is holding the registers A and C, Bob is holding the register B. And Alice is trying to transmit the register C to Bob with some protocol. They're allowed to have entanglement assistance. So using convex split techniques, we can obtain some one-shot results here, which are smaller than one-shot communication cost, which is smaller than previous works in one-shot setting. And there are a lot of works in this direction. I could only mention some most relevant ones, but you can always look at the references in these works, and it's a rich theory. And what's important is that there are some very interesting subcases of quantum state redistribution, for example, quantum state merging and quantum state splitting, which have been studied in several works. I don't expect the audience to read all these reference to look at right now all these references, but I thought I'll just post it here. And the important thing is that it has also found a lot of applications in quantum communication complexity in the work of Touchet. So the next setting is the extension of quantum state redistribution, which is a setting of distributed source compression, where there are two parties which are trying to send a quantum state to a third receiver. So several works also studied this task, and we also obtained some results for this problem, one-shot results. And similarly, we have results for the task of quantum measurement compression, which is a classical quantum kind of task. I won't go into the details of this thing. I just thought I'd describe these applications. For the quantum channel coding settings, there are several kind of quantum channels in various scenarios. Here I mentioned four of them. The point-to-point channel is the most standard setting, which is most well studied. And let me just point out here, there's a huge set of references talking about the point-to-point channel is indeed the most well studied, and there are several works which study quantum broadcast channel and then other channels, such as Gelfand-Pease current compound channel. I didn't mention here the multiple access channel for which we are not able to obtain good bounds. So this is something that I didn't mention, but I'd like to state verbally. There are some other applications of our techniques. So one is the technique of catalytic decoupling, which I will discuss later. And then a weak version of the operator Chernoff bound due to Ulfsved and Winter. Our version shows some kind of inverse polynomial instead of exponential decay in the Chernoff bound term, for those who are aware of this technique. And also, I'll discuss later some kind of pod-based teleportation schemes, and I'll describe what the pod-based teleportation looks like in later slides. And finally, sorry, I think this should have been in the previous slide. It's also the result on private capacity of quantum channel, which was obtained in the work of Mark. So this is applications briefly, and then I'll now move on to the second part of the talk. And let me pause briefly for 10 seconds to see if the audience has any questions.
So you haven't explained that. So you haven't explained some of the applications, right?
Sorry, once again.
No, I just wanted to say you're going to explain some of the applications now, right?
Yes. I will do explain the application of pod-based teleportation, and I'll discuss catalytic decoupling. And I believe I will also discuss the special case of quantum. I will discuss quantum state splitting and quantum state merging very, very briefly. So let me now go into. Yeah, here is where I will discuss the quantum state splitting. And for that, I'll go into the second part of the talk. So again, let me revisit some notations for the pictures that are going to come very soon. So here's the green picture with quantum state psi r. And if you recall, the blue was psi b. And now if I connect these two, the green and the blue dot, I will say that it's the quantum state psi rb. And given this notation and the previous notations that I had, I'll consider the following convex combination of quantum states, where the top resistor over here is the R resistor, and it's randomly correlated with equal probability with one of the N resistors appearing below. So there are N resistors over here. This can be easily verified from the geometric, from the progression going here. And this is the most general version of lemma that we know from this work at least, which says that if the number of convex combinations, this number of swap that we have, are large enough, it's larger than the max relative interval between the joint quantum states psi rb, it doesn't have to be a pure state, it can be a mixed state, any mixed state, with n psi r tensors sigma b, plus a little bit extra overhead, then this convex combination is close to the following quantum state, which is r is just sitting alone here, and we have sigma tensors sigma on all the b resistors. So let me just, I hope you guys are convenient with this picture. It just follows the notation that I described earlier. Unfortunately, I don't have it written down as an equation, but it just represents a convex combination of uniform convex combination of n quantum states. So I'm going to use this picture to the following problem, which is the problem of quantum state splitting. I will describe the protocol in some details, not all details. So the task is as follows: that there's a third party reference which is up here, which does not participate in the protocol. And Alice is holding two resistors A and B. And Alice and Bob are allowed to have a pre-shared entanglement between them. And the task is that Alice should be able to come in. So sorry, this is the quantum state, a pure quantum state psi r a b. And Alice must send the quantum state B to Bob. And then after that, they may have some leftover entanglement after the protocol finishes. Because psi r a b is a pure, so it's unentangled with everything else. So the protocol that I'll show you uses the following quantum state as shared entanglement, where the quantum state shared between RAB is as before, and it uses n independent copies of the purification of sigma B, where sigma B was the blue dot that I showed earlier. So there are n independent purifications here. And the n will be decided by the quantum split lemma that I guess I'll also talk soon about it. I'll just quickly write down the expression for n. But what's important here is that the quantum state between reference and Bob looks like this. Where reference is right over here. And on Bob, there are n independent sigmas. That's sigma, tensor sigma, tensor sigma, all the way. Sorry, I think I changed blue to red. Sorry about that. These are sigmas. And the idea is that Alice will view this quantum state as the following quantum state, where with 1 over n probability, R is correlated at a random location where this quantum state is RB. And this is possible as long as n is large enough. So this picture can be assumed to be true up to an error of epsilon. And Alice will view the quantum state on reference and Bob in this way. Although it's of this form, but for large enough n, you can view it to be of this form. And recall that Alice has a purification of everything that is there on reference and Bob. So using ideas that are like close to steering, so I won't go into the details of this part, but the idea essentially comes from Ullmann's theorem that if two quantum states are close, then their purifications can also be made close to each other. Using this idea and with some appropriate measurement, Alice will do a measurement on her resistors and realize this convex combination on Bob's end up to some error epsilon. Again, modulo some technical details, which is basically what does it mean to realize convex combination, but this essentially means that Alice will do a measurement and she'll obtain an outcome I. If the outcome is I, then the quantum state is at the ith location with Bob. Alice will just measure and she'll communicate the outcome, which you recall it was log n was the number of bits, and it was d max of plus log of n over epsilon number of bits. And if you optimize over sigma, then you obtain the best possible rate. And this is a standard definition of a one-shot version of the mutual information. If you recall in the definition of mutual information, it's in terms of relative entropy, and the infimum is achieved for the marginal psi b, but for the one-shot definition, it is this way. And the key point is that you can choose the best possible sigma and get the least possible rate, communication required. So now, because we can make some protocol very smooth as well, so we achieve a smooth version of this one-shot version of mutual information plus a little bit of error for error to epsilon. And it is known that a lower bound of this has to be, that means any protocol requires this much communication. And if you recall, it's in the one-shot system. And the earlier work achieved very close to this, but up to log b is the dimension of the system. This many number of bits extra was required, so we can get rid of that. And in, well, as I mentioned earlier, in the case of quantum state redistribution, we can also do much better than other works, but for quantum state splitting, we get this marginal improvement. But it's a simple framework to describe. So for quantum state splitting, and quantum state merging is the time reverse of quantum state splitting, so we can also achieve that task with similar communication. So, sorry, at this stage, are there any questions from the audience? If not, then I will continue. So now, given this protocol, I hope I managed to convey some ideas behind the protocol. So I'll kind of give some more, try to connect it to known techniques. So for example, I'll try to connect it to the well-known technique of decoupling via random unit tree. So in this case, what happens is that Alice applies a random unit tree on a local system, and there are also some additional states required, but I won't go into that right now. But so a key idea is that Alice applies a random unit tree, and if she can send a part of her system to Bob, then her local system gets decoupled from the reference, and you can kind of use the you can bound the amount of decoupling obtained between reference and Alice, and then as a function of the number of qubits that Alice communicates, and then Bob can kind of, because Alice is independent of reference, that means everything is with Bob, and Bob can kind of purify the quantum state on the reference. And let me quickly mention here, there are a lot of results over here that I mentioned. You're welcome to read it quickly if you like, but I just want to mention that this technique is very well known in the community, and it has been used in several works in the past, and I would like you to refer to the very nice thesis of Dupuy for a very nice exposition of this and of Scher. So I will now go to and describe some connection between convex split and the decoupling approach. So as you can see from the definition of convex split lemma, from the statement of the lemma itself, that it says it's a statement about some kind of decoupling between reference and the registers on which we are doing the convex combination. So let me just quickly go back to the picture here. I think 2 minutes. Yeah. So it's essentially a kind of decoupling statement from where you decouple reference from other systems. Although in our protocols we don't really use it from that point of view, but one could have protocols where one can use it that way. So for example, I'll mention this very nice result of Magins and co-authors, where they show that if you adopt this picture of decoupling where you are allowed to decouple using some additional catalysts, then the convex split lemma gives the near optimal amount of discarded number of qubits. And you can use it in protocols in this way. So let me clarify some more context. This probably expresses also my point of view. This is that decoupling by a random unit tree can be viewed as a quantum analog of this thing known as random binning argument, which was used by Slipen and Wolf in their famous distributed source compression problem. The convex split technique is more closely related to the technique of rejection sampling. And I'll quickly describe some results over here. At least this is true the way we use it. course, it depends on the context. And for example, the resolution sampling technique was introduced by von Neumann in 1951, although it has been used implicitly in several works in mathematics earlier. And it was used in classical communication complexity in several works. And for quantum context, there are these works which one can refer to. And the quantum spirit technique is kind of fully quantum version of that. So at this stage, I would like to pause and see if there are any questions from the audience.
We are good.
All right, so I'll continue. So now I'll kind of show connection of this technique to the technique of port-based teleportation. And the idea of the port-based teleportation was introduced by these authors in 2008, and more extended explanation appeared in this work in 2009. So in this protocol, Alice and Bob share many copies of EPR pairs, which is n here, n is a parameter, and Alice needs to communicate a qubit psi. The protocol goes roughly like this. Alice performs a measurement on her system. And if she obtains the outcome 3, let's say, then the quantum state psi will appear at the third register of Bob. And once Alice communicates 3 to Bob, Bob just has to pick it up. So it's a kind of a teleportation scheme where Bob does not do any corrections. He just does a simple task of picking up the state. He could also apply some quantum channels on it and so on. And if you notice that the operation of Bob, that of just picking it up, sounds very similar to the protocol for quantum state splitting that I just described. So this is clearly not a coincidence. And indeed, we have some applications for port-based teleportation too. Any teleportation scheme can be viewed as a protocol for transferring a part of the EPR pair. So if you can achieve that task without touching the other part, then it also gives some average fidelity for teleportation. So using our techniques, because our techniques work for any quantum state instead of just the maximum entangled states, we can give very simple protocols. If the parties know from which ensemble psi comes from. So this protocol works for an arbitrary quantum state psi, let's say from a uniform distribution over all two qubit states, but also higher dimensional states. You could also have protocols for that. But if you know some information about psi, that okay, psi belongs to some smaller set of quantum states, then you can save the number of ports. So in this protocol, the cost is the number of ports you have. So larger the n is, better your fidelity is of teleportation. So we can improve the number of ports for a given fidelity, then there's more information about the states. But we'll be using the analogy between port-based teleportation and our techniques in a more serious way in the next part. This is the last part of my talk, and I would like to pause for a moment and see if there are any questions from the audience. All right, so I'll continue. So here I describe a new protocol for entanglement-assisted communication over quantum channel. First, I'll give the reference. For this, I'll talk about this technique of position-based decoding, which I believe I briefly mentioned it earlier when I was talking about the applications of the results. So the technique is, in some sense, it's a dual to what convex split does. Convex split, in some sense, hides the correlation between reference and the system. This is the other part of that. So consider this convex combination of quantum states, where the reference is correlated with the system at a random place. And then the task is that how large should n be so that you can figure out where the reference is correlated with the quantum, at which register is the reference correlated with very high fidelity. This cannot be achieved with fidelity 1 unless n is simply 1. Also, unless there are some special cases, but in general. So, but with some error epsilon, we can ask how much n can be. So, notice if n is really large, then you really cannot extract the information. If n is 1, then you know that the green register is correlated at the first place. So, what is the intermediate answer? We can show that distinguishing is possible as long as n is smaller than this number over here. And I'll quickly describe what dh in the exponent means. dh is the hypothesis testing relative entropy, which says the following, that given rho and sigma as quantum states, find the best POVM pi. It succeeds very well on rho. That means if you gave rho as the quantum states and you did a measurement with POVM pi and identity minus pi, then you'd get the answer pi with very high probability. With very high probability. And at the same time, you want to minimize the probability of getting the answer pi from sigma. That means you want to minimize the trace of pi sigma. So the amount by which we can do that is the dh epsilon. And it converges to relative entropy in the asymptotic and IID setting. So we can show that as long as n is small enough, smaller than this ability to distinguish between the quantum states, then, by the way, please notice that you only need to distinguish between two quantum states to figure out the location about general place of correlation. So if n is small enough, then you can achieve this result, and we can prove it via pretty good measurement or some quantum hypothesis testing kind of arguments. So once I have this technique of position match decoding, I will describe a very simple protocol for point-to-point communication. So the problem is of the following form. Alice and Bob are over here, and Alice has a message in the set 1 till 2 to the power r, where r is in some sense the capacity expression. So there's a message m between this range, and Alice wants to communicate the message m with very high probability to Bob. That means Bob should be able to get m high probability. And there's a quantum channel eta, I think it's n between Alice and Bob. That means Alice can only communicate through this channel. There's no other way. And they're allowed to have pre-shared entanglement. So sorry, I think I missed the reference for this here. It's going to come very soon. The work where it was studied, the answer was given for the first time. Let me quickly describe the protocol. Our protocol is the following form. Alice, if the number of messages are 2 to the power r, Alice and Bob will share 2 to the power r number of quantum states psi, independent quantum states. And the first quantum state will be associated to the first message, and the second quantum state to the second message, and so on, till the rth one. I think I should have shown more such shared quantum states, but excuse me for that. And the protocol is as follows. If m equal to 1, Alice will just communicate the first registered through the channel to Bob. And notice that in that case, Bob's register will be correlated with the first register over here. If m equals to 2, she'll send the second register. And this will be correlated over here, and so on. So imagine that the message had a uniform distribution. Then what will happen is that this picture will arise, where the green register is the output of the channel, and these red registers are the individual registers of the on the Bob's end. And for m equal to 1, the green is correlated with the first location, and m equal to 2, it's correlated with the second location, and so on. And then you want to figure out where the correlation is. So once Bob can figure that out, you will know you have succeeded in getting the answer. So so this was the work which first studied the entanglement state quantum capacity in its full generality and gave the complete complete capacity in the surrounding ID setting. So let me mention here that as long as the number of messages that Alice wants to send is small enough, essentially given by this number, the sigma should be psi d, it's a typo, then as long as this is possible, the reliable communication can happen with error at most epsilon. And once you go to the asymptotic and IID setting, you can recover the result of Bennett, Shor, Slomin, and Thalia. But the drawback of this protocol is quite apparent. It is that it uses a lot of entanglement. As you can see, it uses as many shared registers as the number of messages over here. So, and it's not hard to see that this protocol again looks very similar to Bode-Weiss teleportation or the earlier convex field technique that I mentioned. So, I will quickly, here's the slide. And before moving further, are there any questions from the audience? All right, so I'll continue. Now I'll describe a way to reduce the amount of entanglement and in fact obtain the optimal amount of entanglement in the assembling and IID setting. And for that I'll need this tool, which is of entanglement recycling in port-based teleportation, which was introduced by these office. And the idea was that instead of Bob picking up a single port, he can also pick up multiple ports in some fashion. So if I want to send, instead of a qubit, I want to send many, many qubits, a quantum state on many qubits, I could send it across several ports. And Bob, if he knew which ports are, he could just pick them up. So using this technique, which I won't go into further details, but you'll see analogous result in the next slide. Using this technique, the authors showed that if you have n ports and you want to make error as small as possible and as n goes large enough, one can communicate instead of one, which was in the original port-based scheme of Ishizaka and Hiroshima. You can communicate small o of n, a number of qubits, but small o of n is something like any finger that grows slightly slower than n. Let's say n over log n or n over log log. You can communicate these many qubits. So once you have the scheme, let me just go back to the position-based decoding scheme that I described earlier and make it more resource friendly. So this applies in the setting of many users of a channel instead of one shot. One shot was the ideal result. So for any message, instead of communicating just one register, Alice will communicate several registers. So every message will have a subset associated to it, subset of registers instead of just one register. And for any good one, she'll communicate, let's say, the first and the third register, which was associated to it. And then similarly, there'll be another register associated to some other message. So if you have a scheme like this, we obtain the following result, that indeed the number of qubits of entanglement can be reduced to the entropy of quantum state psi, and the quantum communication is at most the mutual information. This is also the result that was there in these works. So it is also optimal in the asymptotic and IID setting and also matches the earlier one. So, and to give you an outlook for this kind of protocols, so from my point of view, the port-based teleportation scheme and these protocols that use convex split, or position-based decoding, are a family of protocols which have similar kind of encoding and decoding operations. And they differ from the earlier schemes for event like teleportation or channel coding that used decoupling via random unit trees. So before going further, I think I'm done pretty much. And I believe my time is also almost up. So thanks a lot for your attention, and please do let me know if you have any questions.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
So the time for questions and...
So I have a question. So you keep mentioning recovering this result of Bennett et al. From the entanglement statistic capacity paper. So, I mean, that in of itself is not a hard thing to prove. I mean, it follows straightforward decoupling. But what I'm wondering is, can you recover? So you mentioned this result of Cristiano Berta et al. About the one shot state merging, I think. Which
one shot state? Cristiano Berta and there was one on quantum state redistribution, which was one shot.
I think it was Renner, Cristiano, and Berta. Was that the paper?
Right.
So they do a lot more in this paper, right? They do, essentially, they prove quantum reverse Shannon theorem with embezzling states. So they have this very general decoupling.
Sure.
Can you recover that result?
Yes, so once you have the one-shot quantum state splitting, and if you also have the technique of what the work of Berta, Cristiano, and Renner had the technique of, I believe they called it post-selection technique. So once you have any protocol for quantum state splitting and the post-selection technique, you can recover the reverse Shannon theorem. So
that's for general. Right? So, I mean, reverse Shannon with tensor product inputs goes all the way back to this earlier Bennett paper. But with general inputs, it's a headache. But you're saying that you can actually recover that.
So all I'm saying is that if you have a one-shot protocol for quantum state splitting, then that is in some sense what you're doing in the for the general inputs, which means that you have an arbitrary input on n resistors and you're effectively doing a one-shot protocol. Mm-hmm. So, sorry?
I'm gone. Continue.
Yeah, right. So once you have that, once you have a one-shot quantum state splitting protocol, and if you use the post-selection technique of the paper that you mentioned, the Berta, Christian, and Renner, then you can achieve the quantum reverse Shannon theorem. So what you could do is that you could replace their protocol with embezzling states with our protocol that I mentioned here for quantum state splitting, and use their techniques of post-selection.
Actually, and so the role of the embezzling states is played by this other free resource that you were talking about throughout the talk?
So essentially, yeah. So the embezzling states are replaced by these shared many copies of the state sigma, which optimizes the max information. Yeah. That's true.
Interesting.
Oh, sorry, I don't know if you said something. I kind of missed out the last 10 seconds.
I didn't say anything. I said interesting.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Thanks.
Any other question? I have a very naive question. So it seems this convex split protocol has lots of applications, but do you have any kind of application to physics problems such as thermodynamics and so on?
Right. So the closest we have been to physics problems is basically via resource theory at this stage. And for example, if you think of thermodynamics as a resource theory, then yes, you can also apply it there. But beyond that, I'm not aware of any applications.
I see.
But are there applications to area laws?
No, I'm not aware of, although it would be very nice if there were some.
Other questions? If not, let's then thank Anurag again and yeah, should we?
Thank you.